Man, this show just got super and fantastic at the same damn time.
Let's go. Everybody back.
Everybody's back.
We back.
Where the joint?
We're going,
the sound effect.
Well, look, since we only have 33 minutes, we only got, I'm going to give you 3 minutes to get this song out and check these mics. Who's starting?
Oh.
Figure it.
I'm starting.
Let's go.
Try Jesus.
Don't try me.
Because I throw hands.
I'm done.
I'm checked.
Because I throw hands. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Black Futurist Podcast. where black parents like me are dealing with sending my kids back to school and also dealing with my own COVID paranoia. So we opt for what? Teaching at home. So I want to know what you're dealing with, and I'm going to share what I'm dealing with, because I've got a couple things that are brand new that I know are a problem. So, Jay, you said that your daughter is actually downstairs right now on a Zoom call. That can't be school-related, though, because you're on the East Coast.
Right. So she's on she gets reading enrichment. We have been doing this since kindergarten. So this part actually is not new at all. It's usually on a Sunday. So we have we've had more flexibility in the past. But so it's a reading enrichment to, keep her, get her where she needs to be. She's fine. But so that part isn't new. She was doing Zoom that for, a couple of years. Everything else has been added on. So prior to this Zoom reading call, she was on a Zoom piano lesson call. Actually, you guys will love this. Shout out Miss Dee Dee from Howard. So she is teaching Lotus. She is in Baltimore, I believe, and teaching my daughter piano lessons on Zoom.
Oh, nice.
I have to teach a Zoom yoga class right after this. Been teaching this group of ladies from coast to coast, literally from California to North Carolina since May, every Monday and Thursday. So life is different.
This is also ties right into what you're dealing with, Ferg. You recently, just before COVID, opened the second dojo closer to the house, so you got some time back. But how does it work losing that tactical piece for the time that we were in quarantine? I see you maybe back in the dojo now, but how are you able to deal with distance learning for a thing that actually is typically taught hand-to-hand?
I will tell you this, man. It was not a problem for me. And the reason being is because I finished my PhD in 2009 from Capella University. And when the world was, parting their ass and shitting on online learning, I had already been doing it already. I teach over 12,000 students on Udemy.com. I have push and play products online that I've been doing since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a big deal for me. The hard part was the engagement of individuals who were not used to receiving that type of education.
Right.
The doling out of the material was easy for me. I had an opportunity to talk to another Bison, Dr. K. Ron Wilson, and she was like, man, this is different teaching online than it is teaching in person. She says, all the jokes are different and the interaction is different. I said, yeah, it's different. It's not the same. And you have to know how to provide a collaborative education approach, which means sometimes it's part lecture, part PowerPoint, part audio, and then you have to dole out what everybody needs, because some people are audio learners, some people are audio visual learners, some people still need something on the tactile side where they can touch and grab and feel. That you have to provide dummy training for people. So I didn't have a problem with it being an educator and being an online space for a long time. It was really, really good for me. The difficulties for my children when it came to that particular space is they want to be more social. Kids had a really hard time this summer because they weren't able to do all the things that they used to do, like the Disney Worlds and the Busch Gardens and the going out and the summer camping and the things like that. Those things weren't available for children. So they were looking forward to school, and that wasn't available. When that wasn't available for little Rodi, she cried a little bit. For me, and this is good for your listeners, I'm in the divorce space. So when it came time for making the decision whether the kids were going to go back to school or not, I was really encouraged that both my ex-wife and I, we were really big on the education mm-hmm. piece. She's a medical doctor. She's really big on the safety portion. And we totally 100% agreed about not sending the kids back to school and then doing what's called Florida Virtual School. The beautiful thing about Florida Virtual School is I've done it before. I've done it with my goddaughter before, and I've done it with athletes before. Because if you're going to train as a high-level athlete, sometimes I got to pull you out of school so that we can do the training that's necessary. So that was normal for me. We've already made a decision.
Hold on. I'd be remiss if I let you continue to talk past these points you're making. I think we have to go with a brief history lesson and then a point of context here. Historically, the four of us did a podcast together called The Super Fantastic Show for multiple years and incredible content that lives on. That's right. Right? Relationship was a big part of it. And then we hit the brakes really hard because Dr. Ferguson was going through his divorce.
Yes.
Now, this is the first time all four of us are back together. You going to just talk right past that divorce? You might want to.
That's the best and the most I can do. If you notice, I didn't really talk about my divorce publicly online. I just said I went through a divorce.
Right.
Other than that, my ex is a chief medical officer of a big company. And outside of that, I got to follow the divorce decree.
So he's like, shut up, B. Back to the education talk.
And that's what the hell I'm gonna do.
Anyway, like, back to right, exactly. School.
And she's a wonderful young lady. It just didn't work out. Like, hey, Clyde, you like it just didn't work out between the two of us. I wish her the best. I think that everybody should be able to do what they want to do when they want to do it. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful thing about living in the space that we live in now. Mm-hmm. And I think she's going to do super fantastic as a black futurist.
I love it. So what I'm hearing is that, like myself and like you, Ferg, the producers were ready because we had been practicing already.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
And my children from doing years of IXL.com were already set. They had been doing Spanish. They had been doing reading and mm-hmm. had been doing math on mm-hmm. IXL.com. So the switch wasn't hard for them. And as I was telling you this, I wanted my children to do the Florida Virtual School, especially since Roddy says she wants to do the Olympics in 2028. Rufus says he wants to be a Division I football player. Rufus tonight is starting second game of the season, starting as a ninth grader on his high school football team. He's already committed 2 years Florida Virtual School and then go back to regular school, because while everybody's sleeping in the morning, he's in the gym getting the jump.
Right.
So he doesn't have a problem with the Florida Virtual School. It is what we utilize on the elite athlete development side when it comes to what you and I would call junior level athletes. There's no way for a elite level gymnast athlete or an elite level judo athlete to go to school all day long and still be at the top of the world. They go to virtual school, and we had two options. We had, you can go to the virtual school within the county, so that the county could get money for that student, but they weren't set up for that virtual learning space. So we use Florida Virtual School, who has been in, they've been in business now for almost 15, 20 years. And there's a bylaw that I found that allows Rufus to choose whatever school he wants to go to in the state of Florida as a Florida Virtual School student.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my daughter does IXL also. So, right, we were prepared. I'm no longer at this university, but I taught online university courses.
Me
so
too.
It's so similarly to Roddy, I was able to convert portions of my business, my career, into the online space. This has actually prepared us well for what I had planned to do before I ever had a kid, which was world school my kid. So now this has, it's, you know, it sounds a little bit weird to some people, but now this makes it more accessible and more reasonable. So my plan was to, she's in the second grade, but from grade 6 through 8, I wanted to live in 3 or 4 different countries. during that time, and then come back to, you know, perhaps more traditional high school, right? And so, whereas it was seemingly impossible at one point, how is she going to do this? How is she going to do this? Opens back up, we'll be able to consider that more seriously.
I think one of the keys, man, and you said this, Coach B, is that those people who were drivers on the front lines in terms of education. I mean, all of us back in the day, we all read Timothy Ferris's 4-Hour Workweek. If you read that book early, you knew that you had to be prepared to move globally, move online, be fluid when it comes to decision making. Those people who have an entrepreneurial mindset and understand that the worst number in business is one, also understand that I can't have one form of issuance of anything. I can't have one account. I can't have one merchant account. I can't have one website company. Can't have, like, so we're already ready to, as an entrepreneur, you're already ready to make the shift. Now, with that being said, I'm not telling you that we didn't have a pity party. We just had it really quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have your pity card party, you fall out, you pout a little bit, and then you get on it and you get to work. And right. I mean, and it hurt a little bit on the business side, but man, the house ran fine.
You're saying exactly, I'm agreeing 100% with you. And my question is to Maurice, the producers were ready in terms of the entrepreneur parents. I don't know if the schools, the regular schools were ready. And I definitely don't think that the students, let's say the second grader, Dougie's kid, you all know Doug Coppin's kid, his youngest boy's in kindergarten. They got him, you know, all for all these years, they've been trying to get him on less screen time. And now guess what? More screen time.
Nobody was ready. Absolutely nobody was ready for this. This is the longest consecutive number of months that American school children have been out of school since all 50 states adopted public education as compulsory. There has never been a time where American students have been out of school for this long, for any reason, right? War, whatever. And so nobody was ready. And I love Florida. Y'all know that's my second home. But because Florida has absolutely shitty schools, and listen, by whatever measure you want to use, when I was there for about 10 years, at no point did Florida get higher than 47th out of 50 states. It was 47 through 50, usually 50. Sometime Mississippi would be like, nah, we're going to occupy the bottom. So Ferg has...
I was going to say Mississippi had them beat.
And look, Florida fights hard to get down to the bottom, man. Florida be fighting hard for that shit. Like, yo, no, we the worst. So knowing that, and see what you're seeing is, so it takes somebody who, for example, has a doctorate and has taught online before, because that's the thing that nobody was ready for, right? Like, back to your question, Ferg, how does your class change? Shit, everything changes, because now everything is a virtual interaction. And so what's happened is it's changed the definition of what we call school dependent and school independent. Four people on this phone call, it's a rack of degrees and education and shit. All of us are or will be raising school independent kids, right? All of us know how to do school real well. Our kids, no matter what shitty school you put them in, for the most part, they're going to be okay.
It does. The school absolutely doesn't matter to me at all. Never did.
That's it. And so so now it's very interesting. So we got this privileged group, this education group now that is privileged. So first kids,
I work hard.
Hey, and listen though. Right. But see, you worked your ass off and have the receipts, the immediate receipts to prove it, as opposed to someone who has always known privilege in education. Their family ain't never had anything different, right? That's not any of our experience. But now, folks like Black folks with PhDs or people who have done teaching before, now we're experts. And so that now that that definition of school dependent and school independent has shifted, I always said this, man. Take the whole achievement gap and all of that shit, because They say the achievement gap, and at the bottom of the so-called achievement gap is black and brown and so-called Southeast yellow and red folks, right? All the people of color at the bottom of the achievement gap. And I've always said there would be no achievement gap if a school system existed where all the people of color were doing real well and the white kids were doing poorly. They figure that shit out immediately. The entire education system will be reformed and fixed. So now some of the people of color who have the benefit of online teaching and have done creative things, they may be content creators. And one of the things we see now, popular culture, these content creators now, do they get their love? You invented a TikTok dance and now Black Twitter will come after a white person doing the TikTok dance and say, nah, you need to show who invented it. So now the people who have learned how to curate and teach online, we're in the catbird seat. And so it's changing what democracy looks like in education, because now a 12-year-old who can teach a TikTok dance is probably better than a 63-year-old trying to figure out. And you only see the top of their face as they're trying to teach your 7-year-old on Zoom, right?
And so a lot of that's changed. Let me say this. And here's the issue with that is that, and I think Jada can speak to this too, that space is created, but right now the wealth gap is widening. So you can have all that knowledge and can't capitalize off of it.
Yep.
You can come up with a great idea. You can sit down at your computer at no cost and write a great book. You can. But you still need you, and you could think you can market it with Facebook if you want to. You still need a funnel. You still need email. You still need an autoresponder. You still need there are things that you need to make those particular things happen. And there are people who have all this knowledge, but they don't sit in a seat of advantage to do anything with it. And that's the sad part about this particular pandemic. There are still people who are really, really, really financially hurting. And I'm not going to tell you that I wasn't one of them. So, I had a pretty good foundational bed that I can lay down on that I had to dip into. But man, it was tough. I saw a lot of my friends go out of business during the pandemic.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Yeah. A lot of them.
Well, right. And that's really the least of it. I mean, you know, going out of business is unfortunate, or having to put your business on pause is unfortunate. But the people who are now losing homes, now that the courthouses are back open and they're hearing, you know, cases about garnishments and cases about foreclosures, and are legit putting people out of their homes despite this global pandemic. You know, hospitals are furloughing patient care providers. I mean, in the middle of a global healthcare pandemic, it's ridiculous the number of people who are experiencing this wealth loss. And of course, the wealth gap is widening, right? The disparity gap is widening because this is the time where the really wealthy will snap up homes and whole neighborhoods and businesses. Yep. And they are making, you know, millions and billions and trillions if they're able to, right? So, and then
not only that, Jada, sitting around talking about it and waiting for it to happen.
Right.
And not trying to stop it, trying to propagate its occurrence.
The next wave of the pandemic is not going to be an outbreak. I don't think it will be an outbreak of COVID-19, except in Florida, where basically y'all are like the program there, where y'all just spitting each other's mouths every day. Y'all don't give two bucks.
Hey, listen, Rufus is like, Daddy, you think we want to play football? I said, son, this is Florida. Football is a religion. They close the damn churches and the football gonna be open, okay?
I've said many times when I lived in Florida, I learned that the proper order is football. Christianity, Judaism, and then there's this something that these brown people do and Allah is involved. That's the major religions in the state of Florida. And look, the second round of this pandemic, I think, despite what is happening, is going to be, to Jada's point, it's going to be the financial reckoning. It's going to be these people who have lost their businesses, lost their houses. And these people, look, what's going to happen if you turn out and you have to evict, or you financially absolutely destroy 5% of the population? What are they going to do? Mm-hmm. They're going to participate in the economy somehow.
Yeah, right. I am on record as saying in mid-March that this was going to be like navigating the bubonic plague and the Great Depression at the same damn time.
You know, what's interesting about that is I had a guy that I was talking to the other day in the neighborhood, and we were talking about, I built a home gym now because I can't go to the gym. I refuse to go. I don't trust the gym. Plus there are a lot of old people that go to my gym. So I'm not going. So I built a home gym. I had nothing. Now I have stuff. And the guy was dropping off a bench. And in our conversation about COVID and about why I wasn't going back to the gym, he said, well, you know, I mean, even if it's a hoax, and he kept talking. And I was like, immediately I started seeing the faces of the friends that I have that are deceased.
That have died.
How is it even possible that anyone would say, you know, well, even if it was a hoax, how's the H word even in your vocabulary? And then I watched a documentary.
You live in North Carolina.
Then I watched a documentary on social media. I was talking to Maurice about this the other day. And they were talking about how the algorithms can present two different fact sets to two different people. So you can be operating on what facts that you've read and seen videos about on the internet, and my facts are completely different. And both of us believe and are acting fully on our belief in these varying sets of facts. It's an incredible time, you know, to be alive and watch this stuff happen, because not all of it and a lot of it really isn't good.
Well, I get totally, completely grounded every day because I do work in a children's hospital. So I remember when we had our first COVID case, that little girl made the news back in the spring. And now it is a thing that is not talked about. And the cases are at the hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, so we are not talking about how sick kids are, you know, any of those things to the degree that we were fearing it several months ago, but we have COVID cases aplenty at this, you know, at this and children's hospital.
As the CDC has pointed out to us, most of the teenagers and children who have died from COVID-19 are Black and Latinx. Most of them, shoot, damn near all of them who have died, and the proportions make absolutely no sense compared to our proportions in the population.
Let me tell you something. The people don't care.
Right. Let me throw this out though.
They don't care.
I know a lot of us are rightfully afraid. We are cautious. We're skeptical of the government and vaccines. But let me tell you, and I'm not going to encourage anyone to do anything, but let me say this as a researcher, we desperately need to know what a vaccine is going to do to Black and brown folks, because our kids, we're talking about school and going back to school, literally our children are the ones who are at the highest risk.
Listen, I don't think people are paying attention to what's happening. I just took a, which is really good, man. I took a Harvard EDX course on Ebola and pandemics. I would highly recommend anybody to take it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And they spoke about the steps that you have to take in damn near every pandemic. I mean, Jada works in the hospital. There are literally basic steps that I mean, every pandemic follows the same damn playbook.
Same.
Trump violated one of the most crucial steps in the playbook. And that crucial step is pitting the public against the media. Mm. Once you do that, you stop the information from coming to the public. The information can no longer get in line and do the things to stop the pandemic. That's why you have this mask, no mask. It's a hoax, not a hoax. That is the worst thing that you can do. And then what he did is, by tweeting himself and calling people fake media, he subverts that process. And then people have to go to him as the outlet for what's true and what's false.
Right.
This is literally what happened in Jaws.
You said in Jaws?
Yes. scientist was against the city council people, the mayor, right?
Literally. Literally. He was trying to describe the sharks and the outbreak of sharks swimming in the water. And these cats is like, nah, we need to go to the beach. Open America up. Open the beaches up. Make the beaches full again.
Man, it's unbelievable, man. And I didn't realize that the three biggest organizations that contribute to the World Health Organization was the Clinton Foundation, the Gates Foundation, and the United States of America. And the United States of America is pulling their funding because he's looking at it. And the second thing they said is you cannot look at a pandemic based upon the numbers in business, because it's not going to make sense from a business standpoint. It's not about dollars and cents. And if you make it a dollars and cents, which Trump did, and says, we're not getting anything back for our money, people die. The thing about it is that the people at the top end, their health care is better than the people at the low end. So President Trump goes into the White House every day with a bubble around him. All those people are tested. He didn't even have to get tested. All the people around him are tested. Test it.
You don't need no mask.
So he can walk around in a mask because the bubble around him is clean. Most everybody else's life is not like that. The people at the top end are like that. So I have a place that I go to. It's called the Tampa Club. All right. It's like a country club place. You go into the Tampa Club.
Sounds like a strip club. I'm just going to say it.
No, it's not a strip club.
That's a good guess.
You go into the Tampa Club and there's no mask in there. Nobody's wearing no mask in there. Mm. Those people are high end, upper crust. They're not. Their life is different, man. It's different.
There's that. Plus, they live in 5,000 square foot homes.
They do. And they have concierge medicine.
Right. Right. But they're not living, you know, six in an apartment or in the hood or sharing a car or, you know, they're not doing all these things that put them at close proximity anyway. So they're even their bubble or their pod is significantly smaller and more spaced out.
So their truth, which is not the truth, is different. And they purport their truth as if it is a fact.
You can't. That's
the problem.
You can't speak to nobody about a pandemic from an experiential standpoint if literally in your lifetime you do not come in any sort of social contact with someone who has ridden a bus. When you can go decades and say, yes, I have not interacted with another human being that was at a bus, right? That was on a bus. When you can do that, like your paradigm for interaction, contact tracing, what it means to like illness looks different to you because it just doesn't get spread the same way. Right. So, those are the people who are at the strip club in Tampa talking about, I don't need no mask. It's all a hoax.
Hey, Maurice, listen, I will kick your whole ass. You want to tell me?
Hey, man, if you wanted to go to the strip club, I'm not mad at you going to. You're a single man. Hey.
They make good wings. Listen, what's very clear to me just listening to this conversation is a complex of two things. One, Ferg, you said you talked about how Trump has blurred the lines of information in such a way that it has become debilitating. And then we just talked about a class of people who, due to their wealth, are able to function in a way that is devoid of caution. And what I hear and where my mind goes is, well, I don't live in a 5,000 square foot house. I have been on a bus before.
They have caution injected as a privilege that they don't even see.
Hmm. Right, right. And here's where I'm going with it. I'm closer. I don't have a 5,000 square foot house, but I don't have the concerns that we just talked about with, you know, not being able to social distance within my home and within my sphere. I'm privileged beyond the necessity of having to go to work, having to get on a bus. And it sounds to me like in order to help our people, those of us who don't have the level of privilege that we have based on our education and our work, that we need to maybe create a clear line of information, a way to really have to ring the bell and send clear signal to our folks. Where are they listening currently? And is it possible? Is it something we can do?
Listen, let me tell you something. I'm going to speak first, because I have to go soon. I'm sorry, Jed. I didn't mean to cut in. I'm going to tell you this. The messaging has been so, I mean, just not even conflated, just jumbled up with, I'm beautiful no matter what I eat. Jesus.
Back where we started.
I'm not naming any people.
No, listen to me. Because
yeah. I already know.
We're a super fantastic show.
Listen, no. I just need self-defense, okay? I just need self-defense. The first line of self-defense, I don't care if it's karate, kung fu, judo, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, or we're talking about in nursing and doctoring and medicine, because doctoring and medicine are two different things, okay? You have to take care of yourself and your input. The fruits and the vegetables and the macronutrients and the micronutrients and pantries, that's the key. Before we talk about anything, that is the key. Listen, man, we can't help you without that. We cannot help you without that. Then we're back to Coach B's talk about the food deserts. We're right back in the same health and wellness space. We're back in the same Farrakhan space. We're back in the same do what you need to do for yourself space. We're back in the same space. So yes, B, where are they and who are they going to be listening to? Because I ain't even going to say the woman's name. The woman led all y'all people down on the path to hell and then changed gears on y'all because she got a personal chef and became a vegan on y'all ass, and y'all done follow her. And she done sent some of y'all to hell. She done sent y'all to health and wellness hell, telling y'all can eat what y'all want to eat, and she lied to y'all. That's a lie straight from the pit.
This message is brought to you by Olympian Dr. Roddy Ferguson.
Let me say this. I have...
And he just smacked the mic off his desk.
Smacked the mic. I have been surrounded by folks who were, you know, busy with life and, you know, might not have been taking care of themselves. But during this time where they have had to be at home, are really, really doing it. Like, they too have built home gyms. They are thinking more about what they order from Instacart, like all of the things, and the results after these, 6 months, the results mm-hmm. are showing. I mean, lifestyle changes have happened. So, Roddy, I hope that makes you feel a little bit better. But what I really want to say about the point is that it's tough to listen to us talk about how contagious the disease is and the long-term chronic disorders that it may cause when people still have to go to work. Like, there is no relief for the people who, you know, have to work the everyday jobs. There is no mortgage relief. There is no anything to incentivize staying mm-hmm. home, being safe, working less. There's nothing. Yeah. So we can, you know, please, let's work on getting the messaging out there. I have a visitor. Let's work on getting the messaging out there. But, you know, what happened in other parts of the world to make this more successful, Italy, for example, they had bill and mortgage relief. They provided stimulus checks, they called them something different, but to their residents so that they could survive, they could thrive during this time when everybody needed to sit down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's a difference. That's a compassionate type of leadership to Furr's point when he's talking about our president and that top-down communication and what it looks like and how it manifests in how we're governed. Yeah, it's different when you look at folks from a business standpoint and say, okay, what number of people can we save? What number? Because business is about the widgets compared to the dollars. So how many widgets are going to die? How many widgets are going to live? and how many more widgets can we get if we spend more money? You don't think about anything like prevention or the economic impact later on, or does it disproportionately affect people by class, by race, by gender? You don't think about any of that. You just simply say, hey, this is the number of widgets. And when you dehumanize the people, you engage in governance that's not humane. And so when you engage in governance that's not humane, you're okay with letting widgets die because it's just numbers, right? It's not humans, it's not people. So I always picture, like, if I was ever in any negotiation in school districts and when they're like, hey, we're going to open school, I would say, okay, which one of you is going to be responsible for the messaging when children die from COVID-19? And if no one else is, if no one is willing to be that person, or you're just gonna, you know, get on your knees, screw your eyes closed, wish to, you know, God, Allah, the minions of Cthulhu and whoever else, that it don't happen, you have no business. You have no business governing children or other human beings, right? If you're gonna pretend like that's the case. So if you don't get the response that people are saying, well, wait, no, we don't want any children to die. Business mentality is how many widgets are going to die. Then throw in the fact that, you know, our government, our federal government is largely white supremacist and almost openly so. They really don't give a shit that it's black and brown kids dying. They're like, send them all back to school. We don't care. Our kids are okay. Mm. It's not our widgets. It's somebody else's company.
Yeah, I think that it's not even that they don't care. I think I don't think that genocide is too strong a term to be used with what's happening now, right? I think that I've been doing health disparity work for a long time. So I know that when anything happens in terms of, you know, health care, health equity, we're going to get the short end of the stick, right? I know that. So when this was coming from the other side of the world, I knew it wasn't going to be good for us. I remember the jokes about people saying, has anybody black even died of COVID? Yes, we will. We have. It's happening. Don't, you know, not to worry. But I think that when the president and, you know, the people who surrounded him really saw and understood that it was happening to us more and would continue to happen to us more, I think he increased the rhetoric on it being a hoax. I think that there was some level of, well, let's fall back, let's think more about it. But really, when he saw who it was affecting, he's full speed ahead. They won't be able to vote in the election. They won't be able to do a whole bunch of other stuff. I really can Hitler this thing on out, and we don't have to have one single concentration camp, right?
Hey, I want to welcome on board our good friend, friend of the show, Eric Roberson, father of three, and recent guy sleeping on the couch. What's going on, sir?
Hey, man, that couch sleep good, man. I'm getting comfortable. You know what I'm saying?
Don't get too comfortable.
I got more privacy in the couch than in my bedroom. All the kids coming. No, I'm stopping. It's all good. No, it's all jokes. I joke. I kid.
E,
what's good, gentlemen? And lady, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
E, what's the conversation at home now the kids are home learning? And how are you guys talking about COVID at the house and with your folks and stuff? Let us in on the talk.
Well, I'll tell you, man, now that school started, it actually might be a little bit more balanced, man. The summer was what was crazy for us. Like, we had three boys in the house. I just, you know, we're trying to keep them off electronics to some degree. And then everything they just wanted to do with us, you know, we built them a playground in the backyard. Were you going out there with us? You know, it's like, there's a swimming pool back there. You going swimming with us? And it was great because, you know, I taught my boys how to ride bikes this summer, taught each one how to swim this summer. I mean, it was like really invested. It was a great, great summer. But at the same time, I sacrificed a lot.
Eric Roberson is a Grammy-nominated singer who sits in a room surrounded by electronics all day and wants his kids to spend less time on electronics.
And it is. Well, the same way. Yeah.
think about this. I only turn on the electronics at like maybe 7 o'clock p.m. Mm-hmm. Literally from 10 o'clock in the morning till about six, because then, of course, even at 5 o'clock, my wife finishes work. Now it's some quality family time. So it's like 7, 8 o'clock. I'm finally turning equipment on, trying to rekindle these ideas that I had in my brain.
And every little boy that lives in your house who looks and responds just like you is waiting for 7 o'clock because that's when the lights come on.
right.
Thanks for coming outside and teaching me how to ride a bike, Dad.
Look, we're all in the struggle, man. So, you know, the main thing is just trying to keep our kids safe and give the best that we can to them. You know what I mean? So it's been a bit crazy. Now, mind you, we've been very careful. My wife, we're very open about it. My wife has multiple sclerosis. She's doing very well, but we try to be very smart about it. She's one of the last people that should get COVID, you know, because it would, like when my wife gets sick and catches a fever, she has symptoms that flare up. So, you know, high temperatures and stuff like that is just something we got to stay away from. So we've been really careful from that degree. And my kids, when they ask questions, we probably had more tougher questions with, like, say, George Floyd than we did with COVID.
Yeah.
My kids, you know, they were kind of like, understand, okay, why are we not going back to school? All right, there's this virus. We got to wash our hands. Why can't we go to grandma and grandpa's house? Listen, you know, grandpa and grandma, my grandfather had diabetes. He don't need it either, you know? Mm-hmm. They kind of understood that a little bit more. And, you know, even the summer came, I was like, yo, we're just going to create a fun camp. I'll put aside work and work later and stuff like that. But when a lot of the racial tension, police shooting, that's when my oldest son, Rock, who's 9, really started having questions. So our cops supposed to be good, Dad. Like, that's like, all right, let's sit down and have a conversation.
How old are the boys?
And 9. Well, Rock will be 10 on Monday. So pretty much 10, 8, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing well as far as online. You know, I also, if I don't wear enough hats, I teach at Berklee College of Music. Oh. And we're doing online.
That's what's
up. So these last 2 weeks have kicked my tail just from not just the homeschooling standpoint, but just getting back in the rhythm of teaching, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Is like, it probably been the hardest thing for me since COVID, to be honest, has been that. But you know, well, first of all, man, we still here.
Yeah.
You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yep.
We still here. And I've already told my wife, I said, listen, man, this is why we worked hard. We got a decent house. We got space. We can go. When you need to go into another room and close out, so be it. If there's a day that we just let these kids zone out on electronics, so be it.
Yeah,
let's just survive this.
Yeah, you know? I can't imagine having had my kids be the age your kids are and not having parental support. Like, my parents were instrumental in raising and helping raise those kids when they were the age your boys are now. So it's a whole different paradigm. Jada, are you at the hospital full time during the day?
So I'm at the hospital full time during the day. I'm a lactation consultant at the hospital. 100% of our babies are sick. So it's not a birth hospital. So 100% of our babies are sick. And during the time when visitation was quite strict, I was one of the people at the hospital who came in closest contact with people from the outside because I am in mom's face trying to help that baby to latch, right? So I am right there. PPE was available, so that part wasn't an issue per se. But yeah, I am there. I am I'm doing more phone consultations or, you know, as many as I can, providing phone or virtual support. We have started. So HIPAA has suspended some of their regulations, so I can use FaceTime, right, without violation. So I'm there full time. I am not physically seeing as many moms and babies I would have.
My question was to the healthcare workers and other people who are essential workers per se that still have to go somewhere every day who have kids. How are you handling that? Like, what are you doing with your daughter?
Yeah, so back in March, I got with another family, and we are co-schooling the children. So she works from home every day. My mother, is a part of our pod. We developed this Petri dish early. Mm-hmm. And so they are, you know, between the two or three houses, and that's it. And okay. all of those families really agree. And so we alternate housing, and we provide, you know, we provide education, we provide food, we do all of the things. So we named our school, we call it Chatty Academy, Corona wow. Homeschool Academy for talented and talkative youth.
Chatty.
And we had t-shirts at the end of the year. I mean, we were doing it up so that when pods really did become a thing right at the beginning of this school year, people were saying, can we join Chatty? Can we enroll in Chatty?
No. Nope.
We know where we have been.
You can franchise. And
we are really good about communicating. Hey, my sister is coming in town, but she got tested, or, you know, we are communicating in that way with mad respect for each other. So it's working.
Yeah, that's the deal. And I'm wondering, it's great that you have another family that's got the same priorities, because my next question, which you preempted, was if you're an essential worker who has your kid who's now doing online education, how does that even work? But you've got your co-parenting basically with these other families, which is fantastic.
Yeah, co-parenting with this other family. It's still not easy. And this is what I've had to explain to my boss, my co-workers. It's not easy. I get calls. What's the password? She can't get on. Does she really have to turn this work into Flipgrid? Right. All of those things are still happening. But, you know, we are making it work. We're making it work. Yeah.
And I say on behalf of teachers everywhere, I cannot say this in any sort of public space enough. The one thing that I am thankful for, the only thing I'm thankful for out of this whole pandemic, is all of those parents who ever said, teachers teach 9 months out of the year and get 3 months off. It's got to be the easiest. Well, we respect teachers, but really, how hard can it be? You just get paid for 9 months. Okay. The reason why we're not in school for 12 months is because we don't want to be around your terrible children for an entire year. We can't bear them to be in a... That's why y'all as parents don't have a normal daily interaction with your kid. You have a normal nightly interaction after school. And so now you're seeing what your kids are like during the day when they're turned on. And let me not make it all bad. When they're turned on and they want to pull and they want to knock on daddy's studio door at 7 o'clock at night, they're turned on and activated. And now you got to figure out, how do I take this turned on and activated and turn it into something productive? So shout out to everybody failing at teaching. I'm glad you got a chance to fail at something. If you thought it was easy or you thought you could do, I'm glad you're failing. The other thing I will say on the positive end right now, longtime educator working with parents who are creating pods, you know, creating home learning spaces, it's dope. I would tell you, and it just is just general advice, don't try to teach the curriculum. Right. Don't try to create your own curriculum. You're not experts in that. What you should do is take a set of experiences that you want your children to have.
Yeah.
Period. I want to take my kids to the zoo. Boom. Get a pod. Get your kids. Take them to the zoo. I want my kids to, you mentioned Jada, I want my kids to experience another country. Cool. We're going to Canada. And we're going to walk around and see some shops. And we're going to look at, and there's some signs that are in French. Cool. Just turn it into the greatest set of life learning experiences that you can. Because after hundreds of years of trying to figure out how to educate children in a formal school environment, you're not going to be able to replicate any of that to take your child from what may be, like you mentioned, E, like your, you know, son 10, you know, to take him from third to fourth or fourth to fifth grade or fifth to sixth grade. Nobody is equipped to do that. And let me talk back to even professional educators who are floundering around trying to use Zoom, right? Because they don't know how to use the technology. Right. Educators are screwing this up too. So I think everybody can take a step back and simply say, hey, I have said, I think this year in American public schools should be a wash. I'm the radical. I say,
I have said this is a gap year for everybody. It's a gap year for everybody. We are maintaining, but if, you know, half of the school is not on level by the end of the year, I'm not going to be mad, right?
It's all good for y'all to say that, but I got a kid who just graduated high school and one who's a senior this year. We're supposed to be at Howard right now and next year.
This is what I'm saying. So while Maurice was saying, you said, you know, not imagining having a kid this age. My daughter is 7. I feel for the parents who do have high school and college age kids. College age, because I can't say you're not going back to school or you're not going to your friend's house or you're not going to that party, right? I can't say that at that age, or either tell me how I can be, because you don't look like you agree. But and then high school, because I loved high school. I did all the things. I was captain of the cheerleading squad and homecoming queen. Like, I would want my kid to have all 100% of those experiences. So now I feel like we have this gap year. We hand in our assignments and we do our thing, but I'm hoping that we'll catch up later on, right? We're completely out of gymnastics right now, which is heartbreaking for me, but for somebody who's not an elite gymnast, I feel like that's the safest thing to do at this point, hoping that she'll catch up. Maybe she won't. That's why we're now on piano and guitar, right? Now we got to go after that music scholarship. Hey, right? Hey. So, Maurice, let me just say to you, my daughter is so sweet at school, and she gives us the blues at home. So I wish she were that at-school kid for me.
Hey, Eric.
During the day.
Eric, I want to put you in the time machine real quick. E, you get this time machine. Yep. You get to go back for 12 hours to 1990.
Wow.
And talk to your dad, and you say, Dad, listen, I need you to keep me as a senior in high school this year at home all day and away from girls. Away from girls. All I could do is I could talk on the phone, but I can't leave the house. How's that going to go?
Now, I'll tell you first. I'll tell you an actual experience. I remember when I turned 13 and my sister had graduated high school and off to college now. That summer, my parents put me on punishment. I had a job. I had a little pay route or whatever I had, worked, whatever. I had great grades. And I mean, I pretty much just wanted to go see my friends from church. And my parents both worked and decided, I know for a fact, that they put me on punishment for the whole summer. For no reason. Just because they knew what they were smelling in me at 13 years old.
But E, that's 13. You didn't even have a beard yet. By 17, you had the beard.
So I say this. I say there was one night I said, yo, can I go to it was a church picnic. I knew some girls were going to be there, whatever. And they said, no. I said, what do you mean, the church picnic? I can't go to church picnic. Why are you talking back? You going to punish me. Yo, this don't make no sense. Say another word. It's another week. That's another word. So I walk away. My parents end up leaving. I walk upstairs. I'm so mad that I punch a wall and my arm goes through the wall. Right? And at this point, as I'm pulling my arm out the sheetrock, I'm realizing that I am not going to see the sun for the rest
of
the
stuff.
Like, this is done. It's a wrap. But I was so frustrated that I literally put an arm through a wall because I couldn't go to a church picnic.
Right.
So imagine, I can't imagine at 17 years old, you can probably drive now. You can't go outside. You can't go see little shorty wop or your boys want to play basketball. I mean,
correct. I got an 18 and a 17 year old in my house.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
You know what's so ugly, Eric, is that your parents, at some point, if you were to ask them now, they drew, your mom and dad drew a spot on the wall where they knew you were going to punch it because they set you up from jump. They was like, you ever seen the movie The Game? And I'm going to ruin the end. If you haven't Michael seen Douglas. The game, the movie's 30 years old. At the end, you think he's going to die. He jumps and lands right where they predicted he would try to commit suicide. Completely. They hit you with the Michael Douglas X. You go back and look at that room. There's an X where one of your parents was wrong and the other was right. They're like, hey, we need to punch him the whole summer. How are we going to do it? Unfairly. Okay, good.
And I got that. Let me tell you, I know exactly that conversation. And they be playing dumps to this day. And I talked to them about it. I said, yo, I know y'all sat down and y'all said, Alicia's not here anymore. Are we literally going to keep this 13-year-old in this house, let him roam around Rahway, New Jersey on his bike, go see little shorty, whatever they said? No. What are we going to do? We're just going to wait for the opportune moment and put him on punishment. And he's going to get upset about being on punishment. And he's going to talk, say something crazy. We're going to extend it, and he's just going to stay in the house.
Another week in the hole.
The whole summer. The whole summer. And it made sense, because real talk, I probably had it. I probably have some 30-year-old son out here. You know what I mean? I'll be looking like an older
You'll
brother,
be
uncle Papa. Or something. Yeah, I'll be Pop-Pop right now. So they knew. They knew. It was probably for the best. And there's going to be a day where I'm going to be like, yo, Rock don't want to go outside. I'm like, nah, B, guess what? Corona came back. Stay home. You know, because he's smelling himself. And I'm like, nah, you're not. I see in your eyes. No, you ain't going to go see Karen. You get your butt back in this house, you know. So, you know, it is what it is, man. But it's parenting. Listen, man, it ain't easy, man. It ain't easy.
Right. Hey.
So.
That's our show today. I love you all. Thank you so much. Tune in next week.
Boom.
Best of luck to all y'all. Yeah.